Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the fabulous, the fluoridated, the somewhat irradiated, and the reason why I say somewhat is because we stopped testing for exactly how much, about, like, last year, including all the imports, which we apparently never checked in the first place anyway. My very special guest today is, you know, I'm really, really sorry, ladies and gentlemen, I'm totally, totally disorganized. And a terrible man. And this means that sometimes I have to interview the same guest because they're just so freaking good in a short time frame. So it is my regret and also my umpteen times pleasure to welcome back again Thomas Sheridan. Welcome to the show, mate.
Well, thank you very much for that, Vinnie. I'm glad to provide you with this this interview so soon after the recent one.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about you, but sometimes when you have a conversation with somebody, you think that the conversation's not finished, but you could definitely talk about other stuff. So let's get into it. So the topic for today, or at least for this segment, is the Free Man Movement. Now, Thomas doesn't know a lot about it. I don't know ridiculous amounts about it, although I have probably interviewed many, many people from the Free Man Movement. Now, first thing I want to put up there is that there's a whole bunch of different labels and a whole bunch of different methodologies that all kind of come from the same idea, and that's what I call the Free Man Movement, removing legal fiction names, becoming free from the system, not having your birth certificate owned by some other scumbag, not paying unjust taxes, etc. That's more or less the generalized mantra across all these different methodologies of getting out of the system. Is that, would you agree with that, Thomas?
Yeah, I would. I think that's the way I perceive it as well. It's quite a broad church in many ways when you start looking at it that way, rather than one thing. And people seem to come at it from different angles. Well, yeah, I agree with that. That would basically fit in my understanding of the Free Man Movement.
Okay. Now, my second understanding of the Free Movement, Free Man Movement, and this is in quotation marks, Free Man Movement. I know you can call yourself sovereign or just free or some other term or whatever, but we're just speaking in a general kind of way, and we want to just discuss the topic in and of itself, not implying that, you know, everybody who does this is stupid or anything of that nature. I'm just looking at it. Can you name me one person who's done something like this in order to retain their sovereignty, become a free man, or get rid of their straw man, something like that, that one, didn't get arrested, harassed, or tortured by the authorities, two, still has their private property, house, car, boat, etc., three, didn't lose their children or partner, four, currently has a good life, good work, happy family. And five, has no post-traumatic stress disorder or mental and social problems.
No.
Okay, so...
I can name people who've had a person who's had an individual impressive victory in one aspect of it. But I cannot... it's actually a free woman. She's a friend of mine in Norway, and she managed to get from Norway to Portugal without a passport. So that's one person I know who actually had a success within one element of it. I don't know anyone else who's had... Well, what I would say is who's had... Now, okay, it's a very difficult road to go down. So it takes a lot of fortitude. It takes a hell of a lot of heartbreak to get through it. My attitude is it's not worth doing it for that reason alone. And I think there are certain people who should not be doing it. And one of the things that people I think that should not be doing it are married men with children or married women with children. And I'll tell you why. A couple of years ago, I was staying in someone's house in England, and this guy was like an evangelical freeman. And he was sort of caught up in the whole kind of the early messianic stage where, you know, everything is going to be wonderful. You know, this is the beginning of a new world. And he was watching all the videos by the top freeman. He was doing the whole thing. And he basically ended up subjecting his family to a life of incredible disruption and insecurity based on this desire he had to take on the system and win. His wife eventually left him with the kids, and he's back. He's 48 years old, and he's now back home living with his parents, and he's on social welfare. He had a house. They were renting a house from I think the local council. He had that. He had a nice wife, two lovely kids. He had a life. He had a family, and because he got into this freeman thing, he basically lost. In order to prove a point, he lost the most important things in his life, and I thought it was a great tragedy. And that was exactly what put me off the freeman thing for good, like the inherent danger of it, the inherent incredible hassle of it.
I don't know about you, but I try to avoid anxiety. I feel like I have quite a large quantity of it just in my daily business. Anything that actually causes to raise my level of anxiety, things like paperwork, interactions with authority figures, getting up early-ish in the morning to go to places that are boring and don't want to be, that alone is the reason why I wouldn't do it. Now, here's the point, though. In 200 years' time, people that are going through this awful grief now may become known as the founding fathers of the new freedom that the world currently enjoys. Let's say theoretically, because these people are doing what is right, what they feel is right. And technically, if you just want to like add up the numbers here, technically what they're doing is right. It's the right thing to do. However, they are often putting themselves at great risk and also destroying not only their own lives, but the lives of their families in the process. So I think that's actually quite an interesting approach that you've talked about there, Thomas, is that you shouldn't do this if you've got dependents or partnerships or something like that. I mean, even if they're on board with it as well, your life becomes an anxiety fest, okay? Because you've got to constantly be paranoid, constantly be reading up paperwork and doing all of this stuff. And what occurs to me is that you go through a form of trauma-based mind control. Just like happens to law students, you get sleep deprivation, silo mentality, which means you basically have to be one with the pack. And the other one is complete fear of being wrong and fear of judgment, because like, that's how you got to... That's why you're motivated to dot all your I's, cross all your T's in order to get this little result, which takes you a long, long time, and you lose everything. everything in your life that matters. That's how the system comes at you. Now, I don't see anybody who's up there on these platforms encouraging people to go through these processes in order to free themselves from the system. I don't see them putting an open blanket warning saying to do this and to do it right will destroy your life invariably in some way, shape or form. You might lose your money. You might lose your family. You might lose your sanity. Or you might lose all three.
Yeah. And that's one of the problems I have with it, that the leaders of this movement don't actually say that. They don't come out and do it. And I agree with you that once they're doing it for the right reasons, they're not trying to avoid, you know, debts that they deliberately ran up in order to do this, or they're avoiding child support or something like that. Yes, they are right. Morally, they're right, because the legal system is artificial. It's like anything else. Now, what you said about the trauma part of it is absolutely true. I mean, anyone who's ever been in a court, unless you're in there getting paid, it's a horrible experience. It's a horrible place to be. A courthouse.
I don't think getting paid or not makes a difference there, though.
Yeah, but if you are getting a salary, like a decent salary as a lawyer or a judge, at least it helps you tolerate the misery of the building.
Yeah, that's because you can buy experience. Yeah, it's because you can buy really expensive ways of helping you forget about it later on.
Precisely. That's why half of them are cokeheads and things like that. Or alcoholics. No, the expression is drunk as a judge. That's to try and clear out all the negative energy they pick up all day in the courthouse. Now, if you go into that situation, you enter into that magic circle. When you go in there as a free man with your Black's Law Dictionary and the mountains of paperwork that you've spent all your time processing and writing up and studying each minutiae of, and you go in there, remember, you're going in there no matter what, you will lose, because everyone else in that courthouse is going to get paid except you. Now that's one way they've already beaten you. And secondly, everyone in that courthouse hates your guts. You have no friends in there. You've literally entered into a pit of wolves, and every last one of them in there wants to savage you, and they'll do everything to do it. Now we get these videos posted on YouTube where it'll show like Freeman victory or something like that. And a lot of them are very ambiguous, and a lot of them come from the early days of when the movement was taken off, 2008, 2009. And basically it was just saying, get this fucker out of my sight. I can't stand looking at him anymore. That's not a victory. That's almost like bamboozling the judge who were ignorant of it at an early stage and were trying to get rid of you. Since that time, a lot of the staff, a lot of the legal people, the lawyers, the judges, the police have become very, very knowledgeable of the free man movement. So that initial sort of first strike, early days, you know, successes, which are more out of frustration of the judge not now knowing how to handle it, are over. If you're trying that stuff now, you're going in there with almost no chance of survival. And it'll be so soul destroying, and there are some fellows who do enjoy that, but it can be so soul destroying. You have to ask yourself, like you said, is it worth it? Is it easier just to play the game? Like that's how I feel about the system. My attitude is I keep my head down. I'm a model citizen, and I've always have been in my own life, just because I don't need the hassle. Life is hard enough as it is without introducing more. And it seems to me there's almost a sadomasochistic quality to some of these free men guys. It's almost like they want that, as you says, that trauma-based mind control aspect of it.
Well, the CIA did discover a number of decades back that mind control programs that they were doing on people in MKUltra, they found out that the victims actually got addicted to the programs and craved it.
Yep.
Mind control is addictive, ladies and gentlemen. Okay? And if you're going through pain and suffering, that's used for mind control in the main because it's the most effective. How do you get the dog to stop biting your leg? You crack him on the frickin' head, don't you? And he stops biting your leg. Unless it, you know, bites down harder or whatever. But you get the idea. It's simple, pain response. It's a Pavlovian response, more or less. And people think that because you're not getting a physical electric shock or getting physically cracked over the head every time that you go in and get against the system, that it doesn't have an inherent trauma that gets picked up by your mind and actually affects your way of thinking. However, there are many, there are innumerable cases throughout history where individual men have literally taken one for the team and have laid down their lives and sacrificed everything in every way so that other people can be free. This is the context in which I view the free man people. And again, whatever label you want, let's not get pedantic about it, although that's a kind of an ironic crowd to be asking to not be pedantic about the words that I'm using. But, you know, let's just keep our sense of humour about it. Now, I'm here to give those people coverage on this radio show any old time they please, and I have had many, many, many people, including leaders of the movement, on this radio show so that people can actually hear what these people go through. The reason why I do that isn't so all of you people out there will know exactly what's going on. That's a secondary purpose. The primary purpose of it is to give somebody who's been through a lot of trauma a chance to release all of that tension and pain and story of the stuff that they've been through so they can take a little bit of weight off their shoulders and put it onto me, and I'll deal with it for them. I deal with trauma vicariously. I don't get directly traumatized. Instead, I'd simply try to interview and help people who are. Like the wounded healer sort of thing. That's the reason why I do it. And it's also the reason why I can't actually see myself going through this process myself of releasing myself from the legal fiction, because then I won't be able to help any of the other people who are suffering out there, let alone the huge numerous amount of them that I'm going through right now. And what happens is after you go through that process, I've known a couple of pretty learned guys who've had some success in the courts, Billy McKee from New Zealand, for example. And after you've gone through it yourself, you then try to help other people, okay? But you can't really help anybody else, and nobody helps you when you're going through the process yourself. You're kind of all alone.
Mm. It's just like I said, when you step into that magic circle, you're on your own. That's the end of it. And you it's so easy to make a mistake, and these bastards want to trip you up at every turn. That list you read out at the beginning, I think, is a very good list. I think that was a very healthy thing you put out there today on the internet. That list, I think that would be a very good list to put on your website or something, that you'd have a page saying, before you consider going the free man route, ask yourself these questions. Because I'll tell you why. I think the free man movement has been in crisis, and I'm not naming names here, and I'm not putting any people down. I'm just mentioning a fact. I think it's been in serious crisis ever since a couple of the leaders of the movement, after, you know, years of telling us that, you know, it's all a fiction and, you know, you can beat the system, are giving, you know, giving press conferences from either inside jail cells or outside courthouses. This is not very reassuring to people. And yet there still is kind of hope that people see this and they can't put one and one together. And it says if the absolute expert, if one of the absolute experts on this is giving a press conference from a prison cell, then it doesn't work. It doesn't work. It's as simple as that.
In most ways, I feel that it's a public relations and public perception war. And I believe that it might even be, ironically, more effective just talking about these things and the legal fictions and all of that kind of nature just to police. Like, don't be out there with a megaphone or anything. Just go up and talk to police about it and ask them questions and see if they know. And that's how you get public relations. Because I'm thinking strategically here, in terms of going into a den of wolves, the only way I could see that analogy working is if you are defended on all sides as you walk. Yes. Or many of the wolves are no longer your enemies because you've spoken to them, because they know you by reputation, not because they've had to try and discipline you at the hands of the system and simply weren't able to beat you and really see you as a fly or mosquito or maggot that they wish to stay away from and not have to deal with, but instead they see you as a respectable member of the community and treat you as such.
Well, that's how I engage with it. When I have to enter into the law, dealing with a copper, going through an immigration check, anything like that, going to court, which I haven't been to in many, many years, I had a minor fine years ago, I am the most polite and agreeable and cordial and complicit person that they'll ever meet. I do not want a showdown. I do not want to express frustration. I want them to know that I am cooperating so I can be, they can be out of my face as soon as possible, so I don't have to deal with them anymore. And you brought up a very interesting point there. There's a certain element of free men that I've met, and they're not the majority, but I've met them, and they have a criminal nature in the sense that they have a hard man. They want to take on the law. They're looking for some kind of showdown with the law or something like that. And this is, you know, like it's almost like they're looking for a confrontation. And these people are, you know, they're loose cannons within that movement, I would imagine. And you do see them. I've actually went to a couple of Freeman meetings, and there was literally a small percentage of the audience every time were criminals who were trying to, like, get out of a scam. As simple as that. They'd actually scam someone or something like that. And they just saw as this is one extended stage of their criminality.
It's funny you should mention that, because in 2010, I was involved with a guy named Shane Wenzel, who goes by the nomenclature Tane Rakau. He got allegedly adopted into this tribe. He sold them the story about, you know, doing all this business and getting rid of the illegal fiction and doing their claim of rights and documents and everything. And he's been in jail for fraud a number of times. Not because, oh, he's doing the free man thing and they manufactured evidence, because he was a freaking fraudster. And he was doing exactly what Thomas implied, using things that were meant to keep you free to keep him in the criminal business.
And that's why people in the free man movement have to distance themselves from fellas like that, because they are there, because they go cha-ching, they see that, and they think it's a scam or a way to keep them out of jail or a way to get off charges. And they may have done some appalling things, you know, and this is what they do. And that's one of the reasons it's not for me. There's a small element of shady individuals in it. The rest of the people in it are basically cutting into new territory, brand new territory, and they don't have a proper chart. And this whole thing, I got Black's Law Dictionary, which they carry around. That's not going to help you. That's symbolism. That's just the trappings of this belief in the Freeman thing. But they're traveling into uncharted waters, and they're got, like you said, they're all going to be savaged. Every last one of them. None of them are going to get away with it. There will be no happy endings for any of them. And along the way will be a mountain of misery. And I know people are going to be listening to this now and saying, oh, Sheridan's a shill again. Oh, he's trying to put us all off our freedom. No, I'm just trying to tell you that life is short and life is stressful enough. And the best way to live your life is to keep as much shit off your back as possible. And when you enter into this Freeman thing, you're going to get so much shit piled on you, as well as the stuff you're going to have to deal with in your life, where people, you know, die, or you have problems, or you get a divorce, or some, all these kinds of things. And along with the regular life troubles, on top of that, do you really want to add a whole new, you know, a whole new burden of sorrow? And that's my attitude to it.
Now, I think that's one a very valid attitude, and I think the other very valid attitude is freedom isn't actually free. Okay? You get what you pay for. If you want your freedom, if you really, really, really want it, it will cost you everything in a lot of ways. Don't go into it with the illusion of thinking it's going to be easy, or thinking that you're going to have good night's sleeps, or thinking your relationships with your family, friends, support network, your banker, everything will change. It'll be destroyed and have to be rebuilt anew. Okay?
Yeah.
And that in itself is the essence, I think, that is missing from people and their comprehension of any of these different factions of the movement, is that you must expect that it will destroy you and so that you can rebuild yourself free and not the other way around. You're listening to the Vinnie Easter Show. My very special guest at the moment is Thomas Sheridan. ThomasSheridanArts.com is his website. He's an author of a number of books about psychopathy and that kind of thing. And also go to TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. That's Vinnie with a Y because it's the most important question. Eastwood, as in go ahead, make my news. And go ahead, make a donation. We'll start up with a subscription today to send us a regular donation of around about $5 a month. And that just basically keeps everything running as usual. We'll keep pumping out the information, paying the rent, paying the power, paying the internet. Living's expensive and it's very, very stressful. Thank goodness I don't also have to pay court costs at the same time. We'll be right back.
Sometimes their lives to build our new West. They were determined to make the new world strong and free, an example to the world. Some would say that those struggles are all over, that all the horizons have been explored, that all the battles have been won, that there is no longer an American frontier. And we stand today on the edge of a new frontier, the frontier of unknown opportunities and peril. Beyond that frontier are uncharted areas of science and space, unsolved problems of peace and war, unconquered province of ignorance and prejudice. I'm asking each of you to be pioneers towards that new frontier. My call is to the young in heart. Regardless of age, can we carry through in an age where we will witness not only new breakthroughs in weapons of destruction, but also a race for mastery of the sky and the rain, the ocean and the tides, the far side of space, and the inside of men's minds? All mankind waits upon our decision. A whole world looks to see what we shall do. And we cannot fail that trust, and we cannot fail to try.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. And it's with Thomas Sheridan today. ThomasSheridanArts.com is the website if you want to understand psychopathy, which is basically the nougaty nugget of goodness straight in the center, and directly involved with almost all cases of scumbaggery, then get some of his books, like Puzzling People, The Labyrinth of the Psychopath. Thomas, welcome back.
Thank you, Benny.
Okay, now, we had a couple of items on the agenda for today about psychopathy and whatnot. You wanted to talk about the gin, was it?
Yeah, this has been like a thing that's been interesting me for a while now. The idea of ever since I read Paul Levy's book with Tycho, and I looked at that, and I said, okay, that's starting to make sense to me. And I said, okay, I've looked at the psychopathic thing from, you know, every angle except a proper deep look from the spiritual angle. At the end of Puzzling People, I had an addendum in the appendix, where I spoke about a family in the United Arab Emirates who are incredibly wealthy, yet like one third of the children of the country are dying of starvation. So you have this enormously wealthy country where you have this elite royal family who are basically keeping all the money for themselves, not looking after their own people. And this family boasts about being direct descendants of having interbred with the djinn. So that always stuck with me, that idea of the djinn, the whole idea of this Islamic entity, race, that don't actually exist in this reality, born of smokeless fire, which would suggest something to do with plasma or something like that. And they're capable of observing this reality, quite disturbing when you actually think about that. But we can't see theirs because they exist outside it. And it's when you look at the djinn thing, I've been reading again for the second time, The Vengeful Djinn by Rosemary Ellen Guiley. I believe you had her on your show there once. And it's really hitting things for me. It's making me understand, especially when I compare it to folk like Gaelic or Celtic folklore. People, because of Disney, people think that fairies are lovable, adorable creatures. They're not. Our Celtic ancestors lived in perpetual terror of the fairies, in the same way that the Islamic people, the Arabic, Middle Eastern, Persian people,
fear gay people.
In terror. Sorry?
Fear gay people, the fairies.
No.
I'm sorry.
Fear the djinn. And the same, it's the same story. They're a race that don't exist in this reality, but crave it. They want to be here. They believe this planet belongs to them, and human beings are an almost like an infection or a pestilence upon the planet, which has to be moved out. Now, coupling with that, with the idea of Wetiko by Paul Levy, you have the idea of the consciousness parasite, which is what I call it, that if these psychopaths in power are somehow infected, that's the term I used, by this djinn, archontic, demonic, Wetiko, virus, whatever you want to call it, it explains their behavior, because the behavior of the global elites is very similar to how folklore talks about how fairies and the djinn view the human race. They see us as a disease on this planet. We have to be culled. We have to be removed. So they alone, in our case, in this reality, the global elite, can live like gods among pure nature. This is how they think. This is also common to the folklore surrounding these non-human entities, regardless of where they are, from the Nagas of India all the way up to the various, you know, entities and fairy folks of the Nordic, Scandinavian and Celtic world. And then we have it again repeated in the Islamic world with the djinn. I have really come to see that with the psychopath thing, we're dealing fundamentally with a spiritual problem, an infection of the consciousness, a parasite that actually gets into human consciousness, generally at the moment of birth, and produces the psychopathic individual. However, normal, healthy individuals can find themselves in the domain, shall we say, of the primary infectors, the pure psychopaths who carry this consciousness parasite inside them. And whether they are in a political party or a boardroom of a corporation, in the war room of a military operation, a police department, a cult, whatever, a bunch of nuns in an Irish nunnery that are starting to neglect children and let them die until there's like something like a 60% mortality rate. The infection can spread to decent people, and they too can become infected by this consciousness, because it's not that they get a djinn or a demon or a beast of their own in their own heads, but the primary infector at the head of the cult, at the head of the coven, at the head of the boardroom, infects the other ones around them with the same specific entity. And this is why it's very important, as I've been saying from day one, when you know someone is a psychopath, we spoke about this last time, you get the hell away and you have no contact ever again. You don't fight with them. You don't challenge them. You don't become aggressive to them. You don't respond to their smear campaigns, because they want the smear campaign is put out there in order to infect you. Because what will happen is they will try and get you to have the smear campaign at the same level, done as personally and as viciously from your side. And what happens then is that allows infection of you if you do this. That's why when you have a smear campaign aimed at you, you don't respond, because eventually these things burn out. And this is how the infection spread. This is why we have to be very, very careful when we deal with these high-level, high-functioning psychopaths and how they operate, especially at a time of emotional and personal crisis, because that's what lets them in. That's how they get into us, and that's how they feed upon us. This is the reason why people join cults. This is the reason why people do stupid things like take like really bad heavy drugs. That can also cause infection. And I now
incidentally, there's two types of drugs that make you a lot more susceptible to infection. One is speed, you know, amphetamines, and the other being alcohol
and cocaine. Cocaine's a bad one too. But yeah, alcohol, particularly heavy alcohol. That's, you know, why do you think they call it spirits? You know, why do they call it gin and tonic? You know, you just think about those things. You know, these are synchronistic terms that have actually come to actually portray what's really going on. You have to be very, very careful with alcohol, especially hard alcohol, anything that's like, you know, like things like moonshine or things like a hell of a lot of whiskey drinking that can really bring it on. But it's important that people learn to have a sense of spiritual hygiene. This is a big one now. You have hygiene in your personal life. You don't want to get infections. You don't want to get diseases. You have a cut, you take care of it. Well, we have to be like this now with our consciousness. This kind of brings us a little bit back to the Freeman thing, because the Freeman, when they enter into the black magic circle of the courtroom, ultimately, the reason why you just said they become addicted to the trauma, like the CIA found now, what's happening is they're becoming infected. And they're becoming infected, and this pathological feedback loop develops inside them that's slowly eating their souls away, dissipating their consciousness to the point where they're not actually functioning correctly. Their subconsciousness goes completely damaged.
It's the same thing that happens to cult members, yeah.
Oh, exact same thing.
You have so many families and things like that, they find their daughter after a while, after she's been part of a cult, and she's just not the same person. All the things that made her had withered away.
She's gone. She's actually, he or she who's joined the cult has fed the psychopathic cult leader, the entity inside the main sort of queen bee or king bee at the center of the cult. The psychopathic cult leader has sucked the souls of the cult member away. There's no recovery. The only people that can seem to have that can recover from cults are ones who were raised there as children when their parents went into the cult, because because they didn't have a previous life before the cult, they know nothing better. So they're not really as infected as the parents are, because the parents had a previous life. This is why I always say to people, if you go into a cult and you don't get out at an early stage, you're gone. I'm sorry, you're gone. It's gone. You've been taken. And I don't know what happens to your soul. I don't know what happens to your personality, but you're not in there anymore. You're just a shell. And you're right. From anything, all these cults, their families always say the same thing. It's not the same person anymore.
Now, I was having a discussion with a woman last night about this exact topic. And a lot of the things that you've actually brought up in your explanations are almost word for word, Thomas, what I told her. Because we're talking about this dude Tane Rakau, like sort of thing. He's back, and he's like, oh, I'm a business coach and things of that nature, using the Freeman biz as a total freaking cult leading psychopath. I saw big collections of L. Ron Hubbard materials. He's probably using the techniques of Scientology, mind control, and all of that kind of jazz. Like literally a freaking cult. The guy's really scary. And when she first talked to him, all these red flags come up because she used to work for the Child, Youth, and Family Services. You know, the child kidnapping sort of government rings that they have all around the world, sort of thing. Mm. Used to be in that, and is now part of a different organization entirely funded by a charity instead of having government control, where they actually help people instead of play the part in a pedophile ring. So she knows what the difference is between somebody who's telling you a whole bunch of stuff because they actually want to help you, and somebody who's telling you a whole bunch of stuff because they want to deceive you and take your kids from you. You know, and that's kind of the only reason why she was able to identify him really quickly and come to me and ask me about him. And what was really interesting about this topic is I tried to actually explain something about the different part of psychopaths. I said, you forget, if you're a psychopath without remorse and won't think twice about lying or selling someone else out to save your ass, the system, the justice system, goes easy on you. If you're honest, have integrity and honor, they will crucify you. It's sad but ultimately not worth it and doesn't work anyway going after them. Psychos have a kind of a psychic warning system that warns them when danger is near, making them incredibly hard to kill. And it's like the whole system works that way. And then a thought occurred to me, you know, have you ever heard of the phrase by the people for the people? Yeah. Replace the word people with psychotic criminal scum. And that's the system we live in, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep. It's not for us. We are the chickens on Colonel Sanders' battery chicken farm. That's what we are. Get that into your head. That's our level of power in this system. There will be no glorious uprising. There will be no moment of salvation. That will not happen. We were talking earlier about the free man. Let's look at the other aspect of that, the money system. I'm always getting contacted by people who say, Thomas, I have a new idea for a new monetary system or a new mathematically perfected economy. I have this idea where we can do away with money, or we have our own money, and blah, 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 blah. And they all mean well, and they've all worked hard on it. And as someone I heard say the other night, you should take these people up in a helicopter and fly them over the city of London, or fly them over Wall Street, fly them over Frankfurt, or fly them over Hong Kong, the financial districts of those cities, and just show them the size and the magnitude of the beast. And they think that their idea is going to topple that or going to replace that. They become delusional. They forget just how big the monster is. It's enormous. It's beyond their comprehension. And this is what happens because we're raised, as you said, by the people for the people. We're raised in the belief that we have rights, and you know, we're raised with all these folk stories from Ned Kelly to, you know, to Paul Revere to Robin Hood to all these kind of archetypal folk heroes who took on the sheriff or the local judge or even the government and won. They don't exist. They never existed. That's a lie they give us. It's a lie. The monster is enormous. There is no David and Goliath story here. It's not going to happen. And the people could actually see this at an early point in this development. They wouldn't waste all this emotional and psychic energy on the impossible. I have the same kind of feeling about the chemtrails thing. I don't know what the chemtrails thing is. I believe that there's some kind of spraying going on. When I say spraying, I don't necessarily mean spraying. There's something going on with aircraft trails. But having started to study it myself from a completely different angle, I actually think it's something far more sinister and far more terrifying than simply jets with chemical fuel in their engines or in their wings, and they're spraying it out. I think it's something far more massive. And it's the same kind of analogy of taking the person who has the new money system and flying them over to the city of London. It's the same kind of idea. They're not even close to comprehending what's going on. Because I've seen things with that whole chemtrail things that has actually had me questioning reality. I saw things happen before my eyes. I've now come to the conclusion that it's not geoengineering. It's something much more sinister and much more terrifying. And it's not even involving the aircraft. It's involving the atmosphere. And it's taking place on the ground, affecting the atmosphere. And they're doing something to this planet. They're changing it. They're tuning this planet into a different channel, or they're tuning into a different frequency. I can tell this now. I saw 2 weeks ago, standing on a beach here with a friend of mine, a black tube about 40 miles long appear in the sky out of nowhere. Now, it wasn't a reflection of another chemtrail on a cloud or on a milky sky. This was in a clear blue sky. This thing, this black tube appeared in the sky, and then into it flew another plane with a classic chemtrail thing. That thing was not generated by an aircraft. And we've been taking pictures and looking at these aircraft, and a lot of them are not planes. They look more like rockets or something like that. I don't even think they're there. I think a lot of them are projections. And I think what they're doing, my theory is that they're turning the actual sky above the earth. They're tuning it in like a giant television station. And they're probably using They're probably using some kind of electromagnetic directed energy to do that. I'm not saying it is what's happening, but I think that's to me. And they have everyone thinking about spraying and chemicals and all this kind of thing. So it's just like so many other things in the alternative movement. Memes and cultures develop that take our eyes off what may be really going on.
Yeah,
and because here's how psychopaths are.
Yeah, well, here's how you know that you don't really know what you're talking about. Do you get emotional? Right? If you're totally calm, totally chilled out, I'm talking about, you know, you've got your emotions in check. And when somebody's arguing with you and presenting facts, figures, and things of that nature, if you don't have anything to counteract those facts and figures, and you say, well, no, actually, we had this study there and blah, 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 and provided they're sitting there listening to you and going, oh, yeah, okay, well, I didn't know that, thank you very much, and they're agreeing, and you're actually having a proper back-and-forth conversation based on facts without any emotional investment in the topic whatsoever, that's when you know that you've really got a topic down and you're actually quite prepared to learn it and evaluate your thinking. When you get emotional, on the other hand, when you start getting really angry, when you start getting hot under the collar, once your heart starts beating a little fast and you fold your arms and you start to grit your teeth and things of that nature, that's when somebody's telling you something that is making you feel uncomfortable. The reason why it's making you feel uncomfortable is because you're basing a lot of your life, work, plans, etc., upon that belief, which is currently being destroyed and shattered before your eyes with one person foolishly stumbling into your life and giving you a few contradictory facts that make your entire life's work for naught. That's why that emotional response happens. Okay? Now, that's what happens when you're actually a good, decent person. Psychopath doesn't have that kind of problem, though. All right? And I was thinking about how complicated the topic is, because when you think about this, there's a number of different phases to it. And I did one of my associate producers set up a week of topics and discussions with three different areas of the study of psychopathy. One was the brain, the behaviors, and just general stuff that mainstream public, little Joe public, can do. We did that with yourself, Thomas, and Jay Widener, and James Corbett. And the second one was about the history, about back in the day, how this all came about, archons, etc. And the three became the myths and legend, getting into the djinn topic. And it was pretty scary to see what was out there. And what all three disciplines recommended the exact same approach, as you mentioned earlier, Thomas, cut off all contact, even if it's your mother, child, or oldest friends. There's nothing you can do. And all three of those disciplines also concluded another interesting fact, that it's capable of turning others into psychopaths through prolonged contact, often coupled with abuse of some kind. Hence the reason to cut off frickin' contact.
Yep. And we're in an abusive relationship with our leaders, whatever they are, the scumbags in charge. We're in an abusive relationship with them. And focusing on that abusive relationship in the wrong way is dangerous to yourself, because you've been played into a trap, but you're also leading yourself possibly towards frustration. People always say to me, what's a psychopath? I always say, I don't know. I have an idea, but I don't know for sure because I could be wrong. So I'm not going to put all my emotional eggs in that one basket. And that brings us back to things like chemtrails again. Don't be putting all, or anything like the theory behind 9/11, don't be putting all your eggs in just one basket, because that basket maybe have been created for you to do that in order to divert you from something else. Because when you understand how the psychopath mind works, they will play on your emotions. They will play on your emotional responses to things. So, for instance, people look up and they see all these aircraft trails. The psychopaths don't want them to know about it. So what they do is they make something up, like, well, they create deliberate conspiracy, saying we're gassing the people, we're killing them. Could be true. I don't know personally. I just don't know. I just haven't seen enough. I've seen much more proof that there's something really bizarre going on with electromagnetics than I ever had, than I do with chemical spraying, because I just don't see the logistics behind that there. But anyway, the people.
Sorry, Thomas. Sorry to interrupt, but there was something I did want to mention. Charlie Sheen's movie, The Arrival, how they changed the climate so that the aliens could live here more comfortably.
Yeah, there's lots of things like that. I think if I was to throw a guess at this, they're turning the sky and they're tuning it. If you look at so many of these, they're more than just chemtrails now. They're more than just trails now. If you start to look at it, you're starting to see bizarre grid patterns appearing in the sky. It's changed. It's not the same as it was like a year or two ago. In the last few months, there's been a huge change with these trails. They don't look the same anymore. They're literally teased out more. They tease out faster. And there's all kinds of interesting grid patterns and colors appearing in them now. This is what I believe, possibly, I'm speculating now. My hypothesis is that they're trying to experiment with the sky to use it for projecting images on. This could be anything from something tacky as putting McDonald's logos in the sky, wouldn't be far-fetched the kind of way they think, to maybe even staging terrorists and wars or a fake alien. I don't know, anything. But I do believe they're actually using the sky like a cathode ray tube, and they're actually tuning it in. When you see these planes, this explains the grid pattern. The grid pattern of these trails in the sky are created in such a way that they cross. Now, when they cross and they start to dissipate, they create this big milky screen, this gray, silvery, milky screen in the sky. That silvery screen is identical to the inside coating of an old-fashioned television cathode ray tube that the electrons will be fired at. Also, the fact that they're sprayed in two different directions. I know we're going way off topic here. You have a positive and a negative charge. So you could have one set of planes flying north to south, with a positive charge, and the other flying east-west with a negative charge. You then have a charged atmosphere of these clouds, and then you have the ability then to manipulate or direct electrons fired from Earth on it in order to create projections in the sky. It's not that far-fetched. It's to me, it's fairly plausible. And after what I saw 2 weeks ago, I've no doubt that what they're doing in the sky is incredibly weird. It's incredibly strange. And I don't think even the wildest conspiracy theory has even touched the tip of the iceberg on it.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnyacershow.com.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. The dollar buys a nickel's worth.
Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street, and there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest, I don't want you to ride, I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being, God damn it, my life has value.
This is your new world order, the ends and evil, stack bodies, stack bills, steal power from the people, this the orchestra of war, apocalyptic prequel, Halliburton, stay murky, scolding bones, keep it legal.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. We now have two guests, which was the original inception. Max Egan from thecrowhouse.com is joining us now. Max, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on, Vinny. Nice to be here with you, Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, Max.
The amazing guitar player and filmmaker and talk radio guru that he is, but of course he doesn't believe in having a guru, which is why he's mine. and of course, Thomas Sheridan from thomassheridanarts.com, author of the book The Labyrinth of the Puzzling People, The Labyrinth of the Psychopath, and now getting into the more spiritual and psychic aspects of it. But the topic for this particular segment, it might be a wee bit of a segue, it might be able to make it work, is the crazed feminism motif. I'm not sure if you fellas have experienced this. I don't think it's an easy topic to talk about, especially for three men on a alternative talk show to be talking about this, because we'll probably put off about, you know, maybe 12% of the female audience. I'm very sorry, ladies. This is nothing about what, can I define the distinction? There's a difference between femininity and feminism. There's a difference between women and feminism. Do you understand the difference? Feminism is an ideology. Being a woman is who you are. Right? It's not the idea of who you are, that's just who you are. Or at least that's my perspective as a man who's married and loves his wife very much and has a completely reciprocal love relationship there. And there's no cheating or any stuff going on. That's how I feel about it. And there is an element within here that I've seen this... The militant feminist that is almost like embodies everything that a man would ever dislike about himself transplanted into a woman's ego. It's just a deadly combination, as far as I'm concerned. Maybe I'm rambling on with this. Somebody please save me so I don't look like the rambling chauvinist all alone here.
Look, your militant feminism, that's an interesting way of describing things. I don't do isms, personally. I don't do any isms at all. I don't do ism. Feminism, I mean, what I see with feminism, I mean, women have been downtrodden so much in our society. They've been suppressed and brutalized a lot in our society for hundreds of years. And so they're attempting to make a stand to get some of their confidence or something back. But what feminism seems to do is attempt to turn women into men. You know, like if you want to be an empowered woman, you've got to put on a suit with shoulder pads and go out and rape the world the way a man would do. I think it's a bad thing. I think all people are equal regardless of gender, and I just don't do isms. So I think it's just another division, divide and conquer meme, you know. Really, that's all it is. That's all these isms ever are, you know.
I would agree with that too. To me, the same thing for centuries in the West as well. Women were, you know, they were subnormal citizens. They did not have the same rights as men. However, when feminism, and we call it radical feminism, the Gloria Steinem CIA feminism came along, it created a horrific division between men and women. Like Max said, a woman is not supposed to be a man in order to be equal. A woman should remain a woman. It's not a triumph for women's rights if she's climbing into a helicopter gunship and machine gunning kids in Afghanistan. That's not a triumph for women's rights. That's bringing them down to the same debased level that men have been subject to under the psychopathic control grid. However, I find rather obnoxious this idea you have among the sort of the elite of contemporary feminism, that a guy who's working down a coal mine is somehow oppressing a New York socialite for no other reason than he's a man and she's a woman. And that seems to be a growing mentality, particularly within college-based and university-based modern feminism. And they perfected the division and the schism to an incredible level at this point now, to the point where it's damaging women, I believe, more than it's damaging men.
Well, it's an overinflation of a thought process thing. Like, for example, if you feel objectified, and my wife used to do this until I kind of talked her out of it and tried to help her reason her way out of this this way that you kind of when you reinforce your own thoughts by thinking about it again and again and again and again and again over and over, what you do is you can wind up stressing yourself out ridiculously when there's no actual real threat or anything going on there. She'd be sitting at home worrying about where I am at night earlier, because, you know, I go out and I have a few drinks with mates and then come home, and I don't necessarily let everybody know what I'm doing, and I'm not trying to hide or anything if she sent me a text, but she'd call me up in tears, like in the first year of our relationship, and because that's what she'd been doing. She'd been sitting at home overthinking something, thinking about possibilities of cheating, or what if I'd been killed, or what if this had and go way over the edge. And I did actually have to say to her, baby, that's not how to really think about it. Okay, think about how everything's been so far. The elements in the equation, known behavioral traits, things that are actually measurable and verifiable. Is it likely that the reason I'm home late is because I've been cheating on you, considering? No? Okay. All of these things get overinflated and turned into something they're completely not. This is something that I'm just noticing now.
When you're looking at things getting overinflated and turned into things that they're not, even when you look at feminism, you look at the basis of it, you look at what motivates people to do it, usually it's independence. Women want to be independent, they want to be strong, they want to be able to stand their ground like a man, but they always base their perspective on the economic model, this pathogenic way of thinking, this, you know, your whole life revolving around commerce. What is independence? It's being financially secure in the modern world. That is independence. And it's not independence at all. That's a fiction. It's all based on money, you know. So you've got to get out there in the corporate world and you've got to be a successful business person. This is an empowered feminine, you know, in the modern world. And it's not. It's simply a woman that's been taken away from her femininity. They've trained her to be a robot in the machine or to act like a man. Like you say, women getting into helicopters and gunships and shooting people with machine guns. This is not equality for women. This is degrading women, the creators of life, to the point that they have become murderers for corporations. They're going out and they're murdering on behalf of corporations. This is not feminism. This is not empowerment. And they're basing all of it on economics and commerce, you see. All of this stuff is always based on commerce. It's where you can get on the commercial economic ladder or where you can get on the social ladder. All of this is what it's all about. I've always said there are three main things wrong with society, three pathogens or pathogenic ways of thinking, three pathogens that infect our consciousness, which is the economic pathogen, the social pathogen, and the religious pathogen. These three things are what is responsible for all of this rubbish. And this is why people have got such a convoluted perspective of how to empower themselves, because they're basing it on these three things. It's got to fit in within these three parameters, because this is what our society is based on. So they've got a completely disjointed and unrealistic perspective of what they're doing right from the beginning, because they're not looking at it from a human perspective. They're looking at it from an economic or social perspective. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I have noticed that, and one of the things that I find is I don't know, maybe it's a bit sad and a bit of a low blow, but the very, very angry feminists that I've argued with on Facebook, YouTube comment panels and things of that nature, they're all single. Unsurprisingly.
Well, look, people get very frustrated as well, and they want to lash out. They know the world's all messed up, and they want something that they can, you know, dispel their emotions on. They need a soundboard. They need something to scream at. You know what I mean? And you're it. You're you know, they can become a feminist. They can sit there and just basically be a rebel without a cause. They know they're angry. They don't really know what they're angry about. They know that their life isn't the way it's supposed to be, and so they'll put on men's clothes and stand there and scream with a megaphone about feminism. It's just a way out. It's a way of relieving that frustration. You know what I mean? People just got to do something, and that's something that they can do. It's hands-on. It's right there. They can actually do it. You know what I mean?
Can we qualify this? Equal pay in the workplace, a woman doing the exact same job as a man not getting paid the same amount? I don't like that. I think it should be that they should get paid the same.
Oh, absolutely.
If they're doing the same job. And then, of course, there's equal work hours and all of these other kind of things. Plus sexual harassment. That used to be common in the workplace. Men would sexually harass the women who were coming in, like during the coal mining industry way back in the day and stuff like that, when it was really, really nasty stuff that these guys were doing to these women. Absolutely agree with that. What I don't agree with is a woman trying to fight for the right to be a man when she already has the right to be a woman.
Well, yeah, but again, they're fighting for the right to be a man because they're basing it on usually a commercial perspective.
Well, and then of course we could talk about like gender roles and things of that nature. And what's happening right now is we have this whole transhumanist agenda where what it is to be a man, what it is to be a woman, indeed what it is to be human, all of it will be in question.
Max is right there about the pathogens. What's happened is, and we want to be really, you know, really basic about this, is the control grid of these pathogens that Max has mentioned has already fucked up men, okay? We've already been destroyed by them. Now, modern feminism now believes that women should be equally as destroyed as men. Where if modern feminism was to stand for anything, it would say, we're not going to make the same mistakes and fall into the same traps that men have been dragged into by these economic Abrahamic religions, the social programming, the social mind control programming. We're not going to fall into it. But feminism, modern feminism, because of the very sinister individuals at the top, such as Gloria Steinem, a known CIA agent, have directed the movement towards the annihilation of women, incompatibility with the annihilation of men.
That's a very good way of putting it, Thomas. That's a very, very good way of putting it.
Agreed. And there we go. Another aha moment. It happens all the time when you talk to Thomas Sheridan. Believe me, ladies and gentlemen, go to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/ Mr. News Guerrilla Media, or just search Vinny Eastwood and you'll be able to find out. And you to search up Thomas Sheridan. We have some great freaking shows of them, like stuff that'll blow your freaking mind. Max Egan too. There is a number of lengthy broadcasts that we've done, Max, which have actually quite expanded my spiritual consciousness to levels that I can't even comprehend. Now, here we are, three men talking about feminism, which to my mind is a great irony. And just like all the best things in life, they're usually a cruel irony. Because here we have it. I have, I don't know about you guys, but I'm married. And the reason I'm married is because I love my wife. I loved her so much that I couldn't bear being with any other but her. And since we've been married, ironically, as a lot of people claim, she comes into my office and she goes, "You know what's really strange, Vinny? Since we got married, I actually love you more." And I said, "Well, that's funny, baby, because I was thinking the exact same thing. It's sweet, it's gooey, it's disgusting. Love, you know. That's the kind of man I am. That's the kind of woman I love, one who loves me back. What I don't see in these militant feminists that I've been arguing with is the qualities that I like in my wife. Empathy, a willingness to listen, a maternal nurturing instinct, and a general scope of caring, right? Those were the elements of the feminine that I believe are, in fact, necessary for life itself, whether or not they're carrying a child, raising a child, or being somebody's best friend. Those are the things that women excel at, which men rarely do in a lot of cases. This is the divine feminine that I'm talking about, which is being destroyed, as Thomas rightly put, by feminism.
Well, yes, of course, and militant feminists have always got a preconceived notion of what men are like. That's why they're like that. I mean, they don't view people as being individual. They view everybody as being the same. They categorize all men are like this, all women are like this. Well, some of them are maybe in two classes for women. There's those of us who are awake like me, and those are the ones that are on the way. But all men are bad, basically. They're all degraded, they're all this, they're all that. So they have a preconceived notion. So, of course, they're on the defensive as soon as you talk to them, which is why they find it very difficult to progress along that path or progress in relationships or anything like that, because they're instantly on the defensive. So it's just a natural trait, you know.
Well, see, when a man wants to charm a woman, he'll often try and make her laugh. And a feminist will say, well, what do you mean by that? You know, this is the thing. When you lose your sense of humor, I think you kind of... you've lost your mind.
Well, if you've got a preconceived notion with anybody, you know, it doesn't work. It's counterproductive. You can't have a preconceived notion. If you're going to enter into a conversation with anybody, you shouldn't have a preconceived notion of who or what they are. You know, unless you're just sort of there to having a hit piece, you're there to attack them. And what's the point of doing that? You know what I mean? You should
Any contact I've had with, close contact I've had with any kind of feminist like that, is I always got the impression I was being watched. I always got being judged. I always never felt comfortable. I always felt like I was being watched and judged to see when I would fulfill a preconceived stereotype that I was supposed to fulfill because I was a man. This is inherently wicked, and this is something that people need to think about more. As you said, Max, they don't think of us as an individual. That would be like one of us being around a black person or a Chinese person or a Jewish person, whatever, and saying, oh, any moment now he's going to fulfill a stereotype. It dehumanizes. It absolutely dehumanizes the human being because you're ignoring their actual individual personality. And I always felt that whenever I was around a hardcore feminist, I was being judged. I was being judged and evaluated for the moment when I fulfill that negative stereotype of the men that they have.
You know, what you've just touched on there reminds me of all of the arguments that I also have with socialists.
Yeah, well, see, they all have a preconceived notion. Like Thomas just said, they have a preconceived notion and they've already got it there. They know that you're this way, so they're waiting for you to confirm their preconceived belief about you. Like you say, they're just sitting there judging you, waiting for you to take one step out of line so they can say, yep, he's everything I thought he was.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Good old cultural Marxism.
I love the irony of people judging you for being too judgmental.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
You know, you can't make this stuff up, ladies and gentlemen. Real life is probably the craziest stuff that you'd ever see in any movie. A lot of time it doesn't make sense. Oh my God! And then you get into the frustration thing, all right? Because it's sort of become less like I'm Luke Skywalker and the militant feminist is Darth Vader and we're slashing the lightsabers back and forth. But now it's more like I'm Lone Star and she's Dark Helmet. And when he comes at me with the lightsaber, I just, you know, I'm way taller and just hold the helmet down while he, like, tries to slash at me with a little lightsaber and can't reach, you know? Like a child trying to swing fists at you and you just hold their head. That's kind of like the argumentative technique that I see going on here. I've gotten past that frustration point of wondering why they're not listening to me, because I know. Because they already think they know who I am, and so they don't feel that there is any need to listen.
Well, yeah, you get that as well. But even with, I mean, people listening, depends on what you're talking about, I suppose. Are we still on the feminist topic, are we?
Allegedly.
Allegedly, okay. Because I've found, like, even with like with all of this information, trying to bring information to people and trying to wake people up, it freaks them out. You know, when you try to challenge anybody's belief system, you freak them out. If you come on to anybody and say, look, here's what's going on, even with a feminist, if you try to shift her perspective or anything, it's not going to work. What you need to do is become friends with people. You know, even with all the information we're bringing to everybody about the global situation and the way people's minds are being molded and everything, the most important thing about it all is people. The most important thing is to break down the barriers with people. It's about friendship. Even with a radical feminist, if you become her friend in some way, do something for her, buy her a cup of coffee or just whatever, just do little things to help her along the way so that she realizes that you're not a threat. Break down these barriers so that she comes and asks you to borrow something one day or can I use your stapler or whatever, you know, like just create some sort of a rapport with people. That's the most important thing we can do with everybody. Get to know your neighbors, get to know people on a personal level as a friend. You've got to become friends with people before you attempt to shift their paradigm at all. Well, and that's what people are forgetting. They're meeting people and they're just saying, the world's all messed up. We're standing on the corner with a megaphone yelling out to everyone to wake up. They're just looking at you like an idiot. You've got to become friends with people. And then you can discuss things with them and then they can discover the truth for themselves. You can open a doorway for them of discovery so they can discover things for themselves. And it's the same with radical feminists. The only way to shift their perspective is to become their friend and to help them discover that there's a better way by opening a doorway for them so that they can find things out for themselves, because real truth is always realized. It cannot be told to anybody. Even with the state of the world, no one told you what the world was about. You realized it for yourself, and that's how you knew it to be true. And it's important that we do this with people, you know.
I found the almighty compliment. If you actually know somebody just a little bit, you will notice positive aspects of their character. And like, for example, a lot of the feminists I've met, aside from the criticisms that I've put up, they seem to be studious. They're very capable thinkers. They also seem to be active, and they're not lazy.
They're doing what they're doing because they know there's a problem and they've got to do something. They just don't know what it is. So they're doing what they understand. It may be the wrong thing, but that's all they understand. And at least they're trying to do something. So you've got to give them that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Credit where credit is due. And I pride myself on being able to give people really good compliments if I know a little bit about them and be able to praise their abilities and things of that nature. I believe everybody deserves praise, and I believe most people don't get enough praise for the things that they do. And I remember I was going to call up and be nasty to this one female host called Kerry Woodham here in New Zealand to talk about the Occupy movement and maybe 9/11 or anything. And I said when I came on the air, I believe that you give a freshness to the audience and a perspective that is rarely heard with reason and a fair say for all. And I just wanted to thank you very much for that. She goes, well, thank you very much. You know, and I was just like, yeah, I'm like airplane peanuts. Complimentary. And right then, I'd got it. And I managed to fill up a good 6 minutes of airtime with her on mainstream talk radio because I opened with a compliment that she really appreciated that was actually true. She did indeed bring a lot of reasoned statements to the airwaves, even if I didn't agree with half of the things she was talking about. She was at least touching on things that were of importance. This is about if you're looking at a hill and you think about all the crap and everything that's buried underneath the dirt, all that gold, all of those valuable resources, that's the reason why you buy the hill. It's not because of all the dirt on top.
Yeah, no, well said, well said. Well, it's good that you did that, and that shows. That's what I mean. Become friends with people before you attempt to challenge their belief system. Otherwise, they're just going to shut down straight away, you know.
And be honest, and be honest and be wise. You know, like you said, give them a compliment, make sure it's true. You're not just bullshitting them, that you're actually genuinely complimenting their attributes. And when you do open that door for them into this world that we exist in, open that door very, very slowly.
Well, you do have to care about people, don't you? Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guests are Thomas Sheridan. That's thomassheridanarts.com. That's Thomas with an H. And also we have Max Egan from thecrowhouse.com. Or is it just crowhouse.com, Max?
The Crowhouse?
Yeah, it is The Crowhouse, yeah. And also thevinnieeastwoodshow.com is the website to go to download any more shows. There's also a search bar. I want to actually give people a specific instruction on this. Top right-hand corner of thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, there's a little place where you can search things. You can search pretty much any name or topic that comes to mind, and you can probably be guaranteed that I've either interviewed him or covered the topic. And if I haven't, and it's part of the billion things that I haven't done yet, please send me the information of the people that you wish me to interview, and we'll get them on the show eventually. And also check out our great sponsors, the books on there, the crowdfunding revolution, the new Ditch the Can line of stuff. Mate, energy drinks are bad for you, bro. I mean, it's sort of like Red Bulls eating through the cans, so that's why they now have to line the cans of Red Bulls with plastic insides, which got BPA in them, and even the ones that say BPA-free have just got worse chemicals than BPA in them anyway. Don't get stuff in the cans, bro. Yeah, click on the little Ditch the Can banner down there, plus the Gourmet Soap Kitchen. There's some amazing frickin' soap. Max, if you ever get the idea of ordering yourself some damn fine soap, you know, to scrub yourself, get some of that stuff, bro. It's a good idea. Very, very wise decision, I must
say. Mate, I live close to Byron Bay, mate. We've got so many beautiful handmade soaps in this area. It's phenomenal. It's incredible.
You know, you're spoiled for choice. And hey, you know the problem is? There was some kind of study where they gave children a choice of like 30 different chocolates or 2 different chocolates, and they rated their satisfaction level on whether or not they got the choice between 2 or 30. And they found out they were always satisfied with having less choices because they realised that they were only missing one thing that they didn't want, as opposed to missing out on 29 things that they'd thought about.
Yeah, that makes sense as well.
That's makes perfect sense, yeah.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, to give you more stuff that you just don't want to hear. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the final segment here with Max Egan and Thomas Sheridan. TheCrowHouse.com is for Max, and ThomasSheridanArts.com is for Thomas. Whew! Okay. All right. We've gone through our list of topics ahead of time. So I wanted to ask you guys a little bit of something. When you put your head into the darkness, how much of the darkness comes back with you when you walk back into the light? How much bad stuff have we seen, and what kind of effect does it have on us? I saw this documentary one time, and this is totally random. It's not a literal connection, but it was about cannabis and the effect on the brains of teenagers. This is unrelated. And what they found was they did projections of growth in particular areas of the brain, growth in the frontal lobe and development and things of that nature. And they found that it enlarged certain areas of the brain and shrunk certain areas of the brain, particular things that will actually radically different have effects on their personality. And I thought about what if your experience and your trauma and things of that nature has a similar effect, hence saying that, oh, cannabis makes your brain change, etc., might be more like you have different realizations about the things that you're looking at because you've got a different, a third eye open or something of that nature. I don't know. What do you guys reckon about that? Do you think we're actually changing our lives as we speak? For every single conversation that we have, it's actually changing our physiology and locking in new personality characteristics?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you can change your neural pathways all the time. You know, you're constantly changing. And things like cannabis are an absolute changer. Things like cannabis open people's minds significantly. You know, you can get people, they say that when people smoke cannabis, they get psychotic because they become, they develop social anxiety and all sorts of stuff. What I think happens when people smoke cannabis is they look at the world and they go, oh, my God, what have we done? I can't swim in this anymore. And they actually become real and they want to go and live in the woods like everybody should be doing. You know, it actually wakes you up to the fact that this system is absolutely out of control and unsustainable. And it's a slavery system. I mean, that's why I think one of the reasons cannabis is illegal, because it makes people think about things a little bit deeper. Plus, it's a very, very healing plant. It's been our companion plant for centuries upon centuries. We all have an endocannabinoid system in our body. And when they outlawed this plant, we all started getting cancers and leukemias, and we all started getting sick. And I've personally cured people of leukemias, of cancers, of Lyme's disease, throat cancer, skin cancer, all sorts of stuff using cannabis resin. I use cannabis resin all the time, and I don't care who knows it. Yes, police, if you're listening, I use cannabis resin all the time, and I don't give a shit what you think about it. So that's just the way it is, that this plant should not be outlawed. I believe that the outlawing of cannabis is actually a crime against humanity, and any government that continues a prohibition of cannabis is a criminal government. Any politician that supports the continued prohibition of cannabis is a criminal and should be removed from office immediately. That's what I think about cannabis.
Putting my conspiracy hat on here about the cannabis thing, I agree with everything you say, Max. It should be legal. It should be available to everybody. But I'm a bit suspicious of why they're suddenly legalizing it everywhere.
Well,
part of me wonders if the synthetic stuff is being ready to be relaunched.
Yeah, the key word is legalizing it. So we don't need it legalized. They don't need to have any laws surrounding this plan at all. We need it decriminalized. It should not be outlawed. It doesn't you don't need to legalize the lawn. You don't need to legalize a pine tree. There's no legislation surrounding the couch grass on your lawn, is there? We don't need any legislation surrounding this plant at all. See, they're introducing synthetic plants hybrids, genetically modified plants, which is the same. It's all GM. GM cannabis is just as bad as GM food. So they're introducing all of this, and they want to, with cannabis, because it's coming out now into the mainstream, that it's got very, very significant medicinal properties. And what they want to do is they want to regulate. They want to legalize it so they can regulate the market. They want to be able to produce a cannabis healing tonic, which is going to be regulated. But you can't do that. If you're a cannabis user, you know that you get immune to specific strains all the time. You could have one plant that you're smoking or eating or ingesting, and it's working with you, and then after a week it doesn't do anything, so you've got to move to another one, because each plant has a different personality. So you can't regulate anything. If you regulate this medicine, it will lose all of its healing properties. So this is what they're doing. They're trying to sterilize everything and turn it into this whole medicinal type of thing, which will completely destroy the quality of the plant. Each plant is unique. It has its own personality, the same as each person, and they need to stop messing with it. And we don't want it legalized. We want it decriminalized. The government should just stay right out of it, and we should just be able to have this plant and grow it and do what we want with it. We don't need their regulations on it at all. And that's what this whole legalization bullshit is all about. Don't legalize it. Decriminalize it.
Well, in the broader sense, decriminalize it, not in the legal sense, which is basically just saying you're still a criminal and we'll give you fines and tickets and stuff.
Yep.
But yeah, I totally get what you're saying. I mean, yeah, you don't need to legalize your lawn grass. Why this grass? You know,
exactly.
The element here that I actually kind of want to introduce here is Thomas, who's been kind of silent in the background there.
specifically into what? Into cannabis or as the topic of like looking into the darkness as a whole?
Looking into the darkness would be preferable.
Yeah, well, looking into the darkness as a whole, well, I've been paying attention to this information a long time now. So I've been aware of how bad things are since I've been, you know, since the early 90s. Yes, you can be damaged. If you don't process the information with a sense of wisdom, you can be damaged by it, because I've subscribed to the Nietzsche idea that if you stare into hell long enough, eventually hell stares back at you. Or what Carl Jung said, if you go into hell and remain there too long, you will become hell. So it's always been very important for me to offset that with humor. I've been very much involved in writing jokes and having humor ever since I first got into this stuff, especially when I was dealing with the sectarian issues in Ireland back in the 90s. It was a way of rationalizing it for me, so I didn't have to think about it too deeply. So it's very important for people entering this world, this alternative world, whatever we want to call it, to go in there with a sense of balanced wisdom. Because what happens is, and I've seen it happen, people, if you go in there too fear-based, as Max says, you can rewire your neural pathways in a very bad way. It's like being in a cult. And you can have this kind of pathological negative feedback loop that actually has you in a state of perpetual paranoia and fear. At the same time, we have to look at this stuff. We have to stare at it. We have to evaluate it, because it's just like what Carl Jung said again. We don't create enlightenment by imagining beings of light. We do it by making the darkness conscious. So we have to look at the shadow, both the shadow collectively, individually, and at the collective unconscious level, because I'm a firm believer that at a subconscious level, the answers lie there, because we're all connected at that subconscious level. Yes, if you're going into this field, you're going into this work, be prepared to go through hell at times. It will happen. Find yourself being dehumanized by idiots on the internet who never met you, know nothing about you, and say the most appalling things about you, then make up lies about you. It will happen. But at the same time, too, you must hold on to your humanity no matter what. And when you can do that, and when I say humanity, I'm talking about your spiritual attributes, your ability to have a laugh, your ability to take the piss out of yourself, all these things.
Wearing a prosthetic face, eh, Max?
Yeah, no, that's important. You've got to be able to laugh. I joke around all the time. I've got the blackest sense of humor with my close friends. Some of the Skype conversations and stuff that I have, you'd be horrified at the black humor in some of these conversations, because it's what keeps me sane. And it's like, yep, Thomas said, there is a certain amount, you have to offset it. But again, when you're looking at all of these problems, you've got to realize that it's an opportunity. All of this is opportunity. This is one of the greatest times in history, because this is the first time in history that the system has been laid so bare that we actually have an opportunity to fix it. See, if you've got a problem, you're never going to fix the problem until you know the problem's there. And knowing the problem's there gives you the opportunity to fix the problem. So knowing this system is the way it is, and knowing that this whole slavery system and control grid is coming down on us, gives us an opportunity to take the world in a different direction if we choose to participate in the world around us, you know.
Can I? I've got a few things to say now in terms of manifesting and having a look at the problems. What I'm starting to get frustrated with is the people who go, "Don't tell us about the problems, tell us the solutions." Well, hold on a second, mate. If you're not prepared to look, if you're not prepared to understand what it is that you're dealing with, how the hell do you think you're going to be able to solve it by hearing about the solutions? Okay.
Well, when they're asking you for the solution, Vinny, what they're saying is, okay, but what do I do for someone else to be able to take the steps to fix the problem then?
See, what they're doing is they're appealing to somebody else to do all their thinking for them, to will them into action without anything. It's
to
like,
deliver the result is what they want.
Mm.
Yeah,
and they don't understand that this is the monomyth. This is a self-realized evolutionary journey. And there may not be an answer right now. It may not have manifested yet. And that's another thing, too, because people have been conditioned for this quick fix thing.
we're in, yeah, exactly. That was exactly what I was about to say, is we're in the instant gratification society mode. Don't tell me that there's a problem and that you're working on it. Just tell me when it's fixed, because I don't want to worry about it until I can be totally satisfied right then at that moment. I want a cigarette. Oh, here's a cigarette. How long do I want to worry about it finding a lighter for? Well, I don't want to worry about finding a lighter at all. Sweet, give me that cigarette lit up right now. Boom. That's the mentality of looking for solutions without actually thinking about the problems or where they actually came from, or the reason why there's a lighter in your pocket when it's not in somebody else's who for some reason has cigarettes but no lighter. That's what I'm talking about facilitating actual understanding of the situations, and then you work from the solutions from there on your own individual basis. How did you get here? Okay, how is everything working around you? How can I personally make a difference? Nobody can really answer those questions for you, not in their entirety. It will take you a long time to come to any kind of realization about it, because you actually do have to think for yourself, unfortunately.
Well, that's the thing. People have to think for themselves, and they have to participate themselves. See, people say, oh, you're telling us the problem. Well, what is your solution for it? They expect you to fix the problem for them. Okay, gee, I know this problem's here now, Vinny. Oh, that's terrible. What do you intend to do about it so I can have my life go back to normal without me participating in it at all? You know, that's the thing. Everyone wants an easy fix. Everyone wants to follow the leader. They don't want to take responsibility for themselves. They don't want to step into their own power, because like I've gone through it with people. Everything that we face, all the wars, all the legislation, all the degradation, all the environmental degradation, coal seam gas mining, Fukushima, the whole lot, it all happened because of legislation the government's put in place which allowed the corporate rape of this planet to occur. Why did that happen? Because we are disempowered. We are disunited, and we won't hold our public trustees accountable for their actions. So it's got to come down to the grassroots level. People have to change their individual perspectives of how they interact with the world around them, how they view people around them. Stop complying with this slavery system. Stop believing you are your name. Stop doing all of this stuff that people do, and wake up to yourself and start participating and respecting people. That's how we change the world. If people started operating from a perspective of respect and started performing according to moral parameters rather than legal parameters, we'd change the world in a day. But people just won't participate. They want someone to fix the world for them. They don't want to be responsible for themselves.
Yes.
That's the problem.
Stop following celebrity pipers.
Exactly. And even with these movements and things too, eh, Thomas? Now let's join a movement. We'll join a movement. We'll join the Zeitgeist movement, and we'll sign the forms, and we'll go to the meetings once a month, and we'll get the DVD, and then the world's going to change.
Oh, dude, no, see, oh my God, I was just thinking about this the other day. Like, I used to film the Zeitgeist meetings and things like that way back in the day. I've never been a member of anything since I joined this movement to a degree, but what I found was they were all rich kids who'd never had a real job in their life, who are incidentally joining a movement which tells them that they'll never have to work in their life.
Yeah, and they're all And they're all over-intellectualizing anything. None of them are actually participating in the world that they live in. They're going, getting lectured to, getting told that things are going to be better. Well, hang on, you should be participating in the world. If you would participate and change your perspective, you could change the world yourself, you know?
They know nothing about the world, though. If you talk to the Zeitgeist folks, they know nothing. They have no life experience. They've all been raised in comfortable upper-middle-class homes. Everything has been given to them on a plate. And they talk about how nobody can survive in this world today, in this system. But all over the world, there are people who have managed to do survive in this system. All over, they've made their own lives for themselves without the system. They have no understanding of that. And it's very dangerous. I find the Zeitgeist movement quite frightening. And I'm kind of glad it lost its momentum, because it was starting to look like it was going to take over some real power, especially when they started hobnobbing with royalty and members of the UN, the leadership of the movement. And I'm glad it's lost its momentum, because it was made up of people who didn't really know what life was, yet they decided that a better life was needed.
Yeah, no, well, that's true. But again, you know, people they see there's a problem, and they do what they can. They think, okay, well, we've got to find a way out of the problem. I mean, I'm sure there's probably elements of it that work. I haven't really looked at it, but there's probably elements in there that work. There's probably elements of the Venus Project. There's probably elements of all of these things which we could all look at if we, but even with all of these movements, I don't even think we need to construct a way out of this. I think if we changed our perspective, the way out would be an organic process. We wouldn't need to construct a new system. The new system would be constructed around our new state of consciousness. It would be an organic thing if we simply started operating from respect. You know what I mean? We don't need to construct any type of transitional period. It will construct itself, you know.
It will manifest itself.
Well, this is the reason why all these movements get people interested in them, because they show you one grain of truth amidst a desert of lies.
Well, it's people realizing there's a problem and they're trying to find a way, Vinny, is the thing. And I don't think that it's just that – I don't think they're necessarily constructed to show you one grain of truth and then hide it in this other thing.
No.
I think a lot of these people are genuinely having a go, you know.
Oh, yeah. No. And that's actually was my point, is because even when you start to have a realization, it's usually based upon one important truth that you've discovered. And unfortunately, there's – a hell of a lot more to discover ever yet. It's why I'm kind of always evolving what I'm doing. Like, I don't have a clear goal in mind, like, oh, this is exactly how it's all going to work and whatnot. I'm just kind of like bumbling along a leaf on the breeze kind of thing. Now, going back to what we were saying before about heads in the darkness, we're coming to the end of the show in just a couple of minutes here. But the very first time when I watched a conspiracy documentary was Mike C. Rupert from thewilderness.com, The Truth and Lies of 9/11. I don't know if you've ever seen this presentation, but it's incredibly fantastic because you've got somebody who is a prosecuting police officer with commendations from the Department of Justice laying out a case for Bush and the criminal crime family pulling off 9/11 and running drugs and doing invasions, etc. And he says in this presentation, what I'm going to be doing is backing you into a corner, because there's a way that you present evidence to prevent any speculations, suppositions, and things of that nature, so that everything he was laying out became undeniable because he had all the documentation and evidence, and the way he presented it became like that. Now, here's the difference between how I reacted to seeing that information, unequivocal evidence that there is a criminal cartel in control of America, as each fact laid out, as each connection was played out, I started to laugh my freaking ass off. Not because I thought it was ridiculous, but because I knew that it was undeniably true. And doesn't the universe work in strange and wonderful ways when things are very, very true? Is that it's so crazy that it's hilarious.
Yeah, well I've had experiences like that myself.
That's why I do this, because I find it incredibly interesting. I just the journey has been phenomenal. I wouldn't change that part of it at all.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, Thomas. I'm on my life's path. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. I revel in it. I don't have bad days at all. None of this information gets me down one single bit. I find all of it empowering. I find information to be light, even if it's dark information. It's still light. It still bears light. And I love it. I absolutely love finding out how the world works, and I love the spiritual and conscious growth that comes with it.
Yep. It's true enlightenment, really. It's the way knowledge should be acquired, I mean, in that manner. You should enjoy it, understand it, accept it, and work with it. Work with it like clay or something, or an artist's palette. Like you said, I don't get bothered by staring by the dark stuff. I know that that gives me power, because I know the solution, the light stuff, is the reflection of that on the other side. Easy.
Yeah. Exactly.
We'd be the most annoying employees in history.
Yeah, probably. I was never good at being an employee.
Questioning everything the boss is doing. Is this really working with the light side, man?
Yeah, but I love it. I mean, I don't have any fear of the system is the thing. I don't have any fear of anybody, because I know who and what I am. They can't kill me. They can't hurt me. They may be able to hurt this vessel that I am temporarily inhabiting, but they can't hurt me. Never. Nothing can hurt me. And this is all just an experience anyway. So, you know, I have no fear of anything these people can do. So, you know, I think that's a lot of it, you know.
The amount of information we put out at this point now are kind of bulletproof in that regard, would be pointless.
Well, yeah. I mean, they'd just martyr me if they hurt me, you know?
Yeah, that's
then,
exactly.
Then everyone would want to listen to what I said, and I really believe that if everybody listened to the radio shows that I've done and watched all my films, it'd change the world. So that'd be the worst thing they could do, would be to come after me. You know,
I revel in being a pain in the arse for them. I really do.
Well, yeah, I've always been a pain in the arse, Thomas. I got kicked out of 4 schools, and I was always a pain in the arse. So that's just me.
I got suspended 17 times in high school.
Yeah, I wouldn't even know how many times I got suspended.
I was never suspended once. Sorry.
Oh yeah. Well, I'm sure you had some
talking,
kind of outlet.
Are we talking figuratively or literally here?
Well, I was talking literally, but
what, suspended, like from the rafters, like
no, like in lieu of a belt, I mean.
Yeah, I know. I got the cane almost every morning when I was in grade 6.
How old was grade 6?
Oh, not very old. Only about 10 or 11.
Sweet mercy.
Yeah, every morning I got the cane. In grade 6. Sometimes for not doing anything, the teacher would just get me up there during the day, say, get up here, and I'd go, what? And he'd say, this is for when you did something, I didn't catch it. And he just caned me. Yeah. He was cruel. He was a cruel bastard, my grade 6 teacher. But anyway, we're going back a bit there.
Well, this goes actually to prove my point, that high school is a form of trauma-based mind control.
Yeah, that was primary school.
Well, yeah, that too. All school.
In my school, there was an awful lot of good-looking girls, so I can remember, like, actually enjoying going to school.
I remembered that part of it, too.
That was selfish needs.
What was really a pain in the ass was when they got all uppity about the dress code. Yeah. There was a lot of things that you could no longer see after that. And that made school a lot more depressing, and because there were less things to distract you from the bedrudgery and servitude. Anyway, we've come to the end of another exciting and fantastic, spurting with warm intellectual goodness that came out wrong. And Thomas Sheridan's website is thomassheridanarts.com, and Max Egan's website is thecrowhouse.com, and you can go check them out both. And also, again, encourage you, go to the homepage, thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, and other than donating to support the show and checking out the few sponsors that we do have, go into the top right-hand corner of the screen of the homepage, thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, and there's a little search bar there, so you can search names, topics, etc. There's a lot of content. You wouldn't believe it. I don't believe it. I can't even remember half of the stuff that I've done because I've done so freaking much. Please access it. I've documented it for years and years and years. There's so much knowledge up there, you won't believe it. And the YouTube channel as well. There's a link to the YouTube channel on the homepage at the top as well. And when you go to that YouTube channel, there's a little magnifying glass just above the first video that comes up there, and that's also a search bar, so you can search within my channel for videos and topics and people that I've interviewed as well. I've got to figure out some kind of a way of cataloging, etc., but I just don't know how as yet. Anyway, Thomas, Max, wonderful to have you here. We've kind of run out of time, but if you want to have like a 30-second, you know, last thing to say, Max, do you want to go first?
No, I'm good, Vinny. It's nice to be on. Nice to talk to Thomas again, mate. I'll see you when I get to Ireland.
Same. Likewise, it's great talking to you after a while, Max, and thanks for bringing us together, Vinny. And when you come back to Ireland, I'll see you, and I might even be seeing you in Australia at some point. So I've been asked to go there. So happy days ahead for everyone.
Yeah. The Vinny Eastwood Show. It's like wheat. It brings people together. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen.